Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Susanna, that is Susanna Constantine, and this is My Wardrobe Malfunction, the podcast about, oh, for goodness sake, come on, you must know by now. This is episode 52. If you're a new listener, the moment you finish this one, go back to the others and you'll hear Nicola Benedetti on three-point curves, Nile Rodgers on denim jackets, and Jess Gillam on jaw tighteners. But on to today's guest, who is an award-winning saxophonist, broadcaster, author, charity campaigner, and entrepreneur, Yolanda Brown. My God, my guests are so bloody talented, it makes me sick. Anyway, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. Today, I am very, very excited because not because she's the most incredible person, but she's and talented and gifted because you just seem such bloody good fun. So I am with the multi award-winning saxophonist, tick, broadcaster, tick, author, tick, charity campaigner, tick, entrepreneur, Yolanda Brown. How are you, darling?
That is the best introduction ever. Thank you so much. I'm very well. I'm very well. Thank you.
Can I ask you, how old are you?
I have stopped counting, but I'm 38.
Are you really?
I'm 39 this year, 40 next year. Yeah.
No, you look 16.
Oh, well, see, this is why we need to meet every day, because that just makes me feel brilliant.
I mean, you must have kind of Vaseline or something across your legs. You look so young.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad for it now, actually. In the early days, I mean, I couldn't buy a pair of scissors without getting ID'd, you know. I remember going to Staples and they asked for ID for me to buy scissors to do my daughter's homework, you know. But now I'm learning to embrace it and, yeah, just take it in. I did find a grey hair during lockdown, mind.
So. Oh, really? Oh, dear. Poor you.
I've
got thousands. And actually, I got them. The worst thing, Yolanda, is I found them. I got grey eyebrow. I found really whiskery, you know, hard grey eyebrow, a grey eyelash. No, and I don't know if you get little bristles on your chin, but I do, which I have to pluck. And some of those have gone grey as well. And grey pubes. Wow.
There is no hiding then. This is what I'm in store for. This is great. I just got one in my curlies here.
But my darling, so you've achieved so much. And obviously as a musician, you know, you've grown and grown.
Yeah.
But with all the other stuff that you do, how do you find the time? And is there anything you don't do?
Listen, I think the whole journey has been an independent one. It wasn't like in the beginning, a huge record label came and swiped me up and, you know, the rest was history. It has been hard graft, I'm not going to lie, you know, throughout building an audience, trying to create my own lane in terms of the genre of music that I want to play, all of that. And so when opportunities come, I've learned to embrace them, whatever they are, even if I've never thought of doing that before. And because of that, this career really has just spanned and grown and grown. I just tend not to say no, just find a way to figure it out. And actually, I enjoy that. It means no 2 days are the same. I'm always learning all the time on every single job. And everything interlinks in the end. Music and education and giving back is the common thread. And then after that, we're just all about entertainment and having fun.
So do you think, I mean, did you start with you know, the writing and the TV work that you do, did you fall into that? Or were you kind of, did you do that consciously thinking, okay, well, if the music doesn't work, I have another career path?
I think I always loved the idea of presenting. in fact, now having to think about it a lot more and doing more interviews, I remember I actually studied media as an A-level. And I used to be on the radio show. We had a high school radio station that would broadcast across the school, and I used to have a show on there. So now that I think about it, it probably was always in there, but I never saw it as a profession. I was never introduced to it in that way. And even music, I wasn't introduced to music in that way either. I was doing a PhD in management science and then sort of joined a band. The band fell away, and then I just sort of stopped my PhD and became a musician. So the transition has been very different. But I do love being in front of an audience. I love communicating with people. And I think being on stage with a saxophone or being in front of a camera and reading script or remembering script down the lens is the same thing to me. It's all performing. So it all came about. I was performing at the proms, playing the saxophone at the gospel prom, and they'd asked me to do a film, a VT for Proms Extra. And from then it just snowballed and grew and grew. And gigs get gigs is my motto. And it's still rolling.
I mean, you're quite unique in the way that, you know, your music is pretty sophisticated, but you are so approachable as a person, and especially, you know, with musicians with a jazz slant,
yeah,
are always kind of fucked up, and, well, you know, they're either alcoholics, drug addicts. I mean, I've just been watching this when we were kings.
Yes.
Have you seen that about Muhammad Ali?
Yeah.
Oh my God! You look at it, and then you look at someone like, you know, James Brown.
Exactly.
And, you know, various, or Billy, Johnny Cash, but I mean, no, he's country.
Yeah,
but, you know, it's got quite a dark reputation, jazz, but you're just so effervescent and open.
I think that's been the interesting journey through it all. I mean, I never imagined that I would be a musician growing up, so I don't think I necessarily studied musician stories, and probably good that I didn't, or even fully went into transcribing people's solos, which I know a lot of, that's how you learn jazz, you know. But at one point I realized, you know, I was reading a Charlie Parker solo once and I thought, he was on heroin at the time of playing this. How am I, a 16-year-old Yolanda, going to really play it like him? And I think that was when I realized I have to make music that I can sell, music that I can play time and time again without having any other influences, because I don't want to think, oh, maybe I should try heroin to get that solo out, you know. I just think, you know, you can only be yourself. And with that, it did lead me to sort of mix reggae, jazz and soul. Maybe not jazz enough for some, maybe not reggae enough for some, but it's me. And I'm just really glad that I found an audience that wants to come to the concerts, that follow me around the world. And that allows me not to have to think about having a crutch any other way. I can just turn up and be me, whether I've had a good day or a bad day. They'll take what I have, which is an absolute blessing.
Well, you are unique, and you spell your name in a very unique way. So where does the capital D on Yolanda come from?
Well, this was in the early days. I remember sort of write-ups if I was ever part of... I used to play in a lot of comedy shows in the very early days. So a very non-musical audience. I would play sort of in the interlude after the intermission. And sort of journalists would write up the show, and, you know, you've seen the comedians' names, and, oh, and Yolanda played the saxophone, and it just all gets swallowed up. And I've noticed that having the capital D allows me to stand out in the crowd. It allows me to stand out editorially. For me personally, it's nice to have that split. Yolanda Brown is my name. So if I'm speaking about Yolanda Brown with a small D, that's mum Yolanda, wife Yolanda, sister, daughter, you know. And capital D, I can go to any meeting, we talk about brand Yolanda, and I don't feel, you know, that it's an attack on me, which is absolutely perfect.
So when you sign a check, you don't do a capital D, you just do a small D.
Exactly. If I'm signing a check, or if I'm writing to my daughter's school, that's a small D. If I'm writing emails or signing an autograph, capital D, yeah.
Oh my goodness, because you've got two daughters, haven't you?
I have, 7-year-old Jemima and 15-month-old Adelphi. Yeah.
15 months.
Lockdown baby, I know. On top of all of it, she is a true lockdown child. In fact, just today we're going to go and look at a nursery for the first time, and she's never actually seen other children. She thinks everybody's giants and are bigger than her. So it's going to be a shock for her, I think.
Oh my God. But weren't you in Australia for a bit of lockdown?
Yes. So yeah, we were touring in Australia when lockdown was announced. We'd done 2 weeks. We had 1 week left and we were meant to be flying to Sydney, and everything just shut down. We had to fly the band home. But I had a 6-year-old and a 6-week-old in tow, plus my mum and dad and husband. And so the whole touring party went out. You see, the whole tour was booked before I fell pregnant with Adelphi. And I really hate cancelling. I know that some people, you know, they spend their hard-earned money. Sometimes it might be for a birthday party or an office get-together. And I just hate that, to think, oh, Yolanda's not coming, you know. It just feels weird. And so my agent, all the whole time through the pregnancy, was saying, can you do it? Can you do it? And I was performing up to 8.5 months pregnant. I think in this picture, I was at Jules Holland's Hoot Nanny. With an 8.5 month bump. But, you know, I want to play with Rick Astley. Of course I want to duet with Rick Astley, whatever it is. And so, yeah, I thought I'm going to push really hard to do this tour. And so, yeah, Adelphi was 6 weeks old, bless her, on that flight. She did so well, slept, and yeah, she was brilliant. And then it got cancelled. So I pushed kind of for nothing.
So did you stay out? Do you have to stay out there, or did you get back with the band?
We sent the band back straight away. Then we had sort of a week extra. We took a sort of a week in Dubai, but really we should have just come home, because I was just spending the whole time watching the news, like, are we going to be allowed back in? How does this work? You know? So yeah, we had a week in Dubai and then we came back.
Yeah, stressful. I saw that, the clip of you and Rick Astley YouTube, and I've heard so many lovely things about him. Apparently he's just the nicest person and he's got a hell of a voice.
He really is.
But, I mean, you outplay him.
Oh, bless your heart. No, he allowed me to. He was down and bowing while I was soloing. And I was like, inside, I said, like, thank you so much, Rick, because I'm not getting down there, because I won't get back up.
It's amazing because you know, really gifted musicians, you know, instrumental musicians. Mm. So take someone like Elton John, for example. Yes. The way he plays his piano, you hear it, it couldn't be anyone else.
Yeah.
And you're the same, because your sax, it's like it's speaking to you. You don't need lyrics because you understand what you're trying to say with the way you play.
That's so kind. That's what I'm after. I mean, my first EP in the early days was called Finding My Voice. And it literally is that. I just thought, I can only play as me, and this sound that comes out, it is my voice, and that's how I want to communicate. And that means a lot to me, because that's what I'm after.
No, it's I mean, that's rare. Aww. I mean, I'm obsessed with music and I love music. And it's, you know, to hear that it gave me goosebumps.
Oh, I'm glad.
So you're the real deal, honey. Oh, but also, how the hell, Yolanda, do you play in stilettos?
Listen, that for me is, I don't know, it gives me a posture, actually, and I've really missed not wearing heels for this past year, because I find that when I get on stage, I'm quite small in stature. When every time I meet people, say, you're a lot smaller in person, I'm like, oh, thank you, I'll take that as a compliment. But it does make me feel taller, and it makes me feel present, and so I feel that I play better in heels. I do move around the stage a lot. I love to dance around and move to the music, but yeah, there's something elegant about it. And I mean, you are puffing into a hunk of metal at the end of the day. You know what I mean? It's quite a macho thing to do. So it just makes me feel a little bit more elegant and sassy.
Yeah, well, I'm just amazed that you can stand up in them so long.
Hopefully I can when we get back on stage.
Yeah, you won't. You'll struggle. I'm sure you'll struggle to begin with. But you were born in Barking.
Yes.
Is that right? To Jamaican parents. And you were surrounded by music. So who was it, your dad or your mum, who were the kind of musical aficionados?
Yeah, my dad.
Or both?
My dad. He should have had, or should have, a radio show, really. He doesn't play any musical instruments, but he plays everything. So, of course, from reggae, you've got Schiamento, all the folk stuff as well. And then through to opera, classical, folk, jazz, country, everything under the sun. There's records that just lie in the living room, and then you've got tapes above them, and then CDs, and now he's fully into the Spotify and streaming and all that, and sharing my text message. My whole conversation with my dad is just links to music, and I guess that's where it comes from. And also that's where the love of different genres comes from. So then when it came to be a musician, and it felt like the critics were asking me to choose a genre, you know, I couldn't. I just love being able to recreate those family moments of, one day I do want to have, you know, sometimes have an orchestra behind me, which is beautiful, and at the same time have steel pan bands there as well. And I feel that music should just be music, and I do thank my dad for that, really. He's an aficionado for sure.
And are your daughters, do they love listening to music?
They do, and not pushed at all. I think I definitely made that conscious decision when Jemima was in my tummy, and obviously I was touring as well. She was moving around and dancing to the music that I was playing. And I just thought, I want her to just experience it for herself. If she doesn't want to play an instrument, she doesn't have to. Let her just explore. And she just loves it. She knows how to make a playlist. She's got Gem Gem style playlist on Spotify. And if you look at it, she's got K-pop. She loves BTS, through to James Brown, through to some classical music who's in there. She's got me in there as well, which is lovely. But she will literally just play all these different styles of music, pops in there as well. And I think that is beautiful. And that came sort of naturally from her. Latin jazz is in there as well. And then also she plays the piano. She started the saxophone in lockdown. And then she came back from school just a few months ago saying she wants to learn the cello. And so as a parent, and what I always encourage other parents to do is, if you're able to, just keep fueling that passion and that inspiration. She might not play them all in the end, but just to want to try them is a beautiful thing. So yeah, at the moment I'm chasing around trying to find teachers and instruments just to sort of fuel those passions that she has.
Music is obviously your first passion.
Yes.
I would imagine. And to see that kind of grow and blossom in your child is a really special thing.
It is. I think also I'm able to learn from my mistakes, because I was a little bit of a rebel growing up. So I played the saxophone from about the age of 13. I played the piano and drums from age 6, moving up. And when it got to the saxophone, I just loved playing it. I was able to make a sound straight away, play along with the radio. And so I stopped my lessons because I didn't want to do grades. I was a bit of a rebel. And so now I'm saying to my daughter, you know, just do both. You can jam with me anytime, jam with your friends, but you do need to have that technical background. Because even now, at grand old age of 38, I'm like Googling, what does this scale mean? You know, that shouldn't happen now. So yeah, I'm just going to correct my mistakes with her, I think.
So when you little rebel as a child, and was this rebellious side reflected in how you dressed?
Maybe. You're making me think about it now. I was a tomboy growing up. So I mean, when all my friends are into the lip gloss and the, you know, the little tops and whatever, I was in baggy tracksuit tops. I remember when I graduated to skinny jeans, and like all my friends were like, oh my gosh, what's happened to Yolanda? But I absolutely just loved anything baggy. I didn't want anything figure hugging. I don't know why. I don't know if it was comfort or if I was self-conscious. But luckily, my parents just allowed me to dress as I wanted to, even to family functions. Every so often, they'd get me into a dress. But I was really a tomboy. I was in the Army Cadets, the Cub Scouts, not the Brownies. Fully tomboy growing up.
Oh, my God. And then, okay, let's keep on the tomboy thing.
Yeah.
Because you wanted to be, or you were, a racing driver.
Yeah. If you'd have asked me when I was in my teenage years, what do you want to be when you grow up? If I was allowed to speak like blue sky thinking, racing driver was the answer I'd give. But I had no channels. I mean, my parents have a place in Menorca, and there's an amazing go-kart track there. And whenever anyone came to visit, we used to go for 6 weeks of the year every summer. And I would just be on the tracks the whole time. They'd have to drive us 40 minutes to get to this track in Ciudadela. And I'd always win. And I didn't know if it was because everybody else was really rubbish or if I had a natural affinity to the car. There was just something about moving with the vehicle and finding your lines. And I really loved racing. When I turned, I want to say 21, I had a track day given to me as a birthday present. So I went to Brands Hatch and I was finally able to get into a single-seater car. And oh my God, even then my dream was still, could this happen? You know, there must be a women's league out there. And, you know, but only when I got to record my first music video for my first album, April Showers, May Flowers, I recorded a music video in a Formula 3 car, single-seater car, for Tokyo Sunset. And that was my first time thinking, yes, this is great. Plugged it on BBC Breakfast. And as I came off the set, Ron Dennis had emailed my manager to say, you know, I want to meet Yolanda. Can she play at my birthday party? From there, I sort of met different racing teams. He brought me on stage as the Lewis Hamilton of the jazz world. And my dreams, honestly, Susanna, they were just coming true. And I started actually then building up my time on the track and working towards an arts license. So it'll never be my profession, but I love driving.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm with you. I mean, I've never done it on a, you know, a racetrack as such, except in a go-kart. But I think one of my happy places is in the car.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I mean, you know, I've got like, I mean, I've got 16 points at the moment. I'm hoping that they've sort of been.
I've had a totting up ban as well. that we like driving. It's going to happen. It's probability.
It's going to happen. But I, you know what I think it is I think it's because I can't look at my phone. And so there's that break from fucking, looking at your phone the whole time.
It is that, and having the open road. I don't really like city driving much, but I love it when, if there's ever motorway driving or if I have to go to a shoot, they'll always say, "You're driving, aren't you? My agent, you're going to drive. Just send me the petrol money." You know you're going to drive. And actually, I'm coming to you today having just had my car stolen from my drive over the weekend. Honestly, I haven't quite got over it yet, but went outside with my saxophone on my back, ready to go to my studio on Saturday morning, and the car wasn't there.
No.
And then checked the CCTV, and someone at 12:30, I'm sure that's like daylight robbery, has used one of those signal things to amplify the signal and just driven the car off the drive.
Was he wearing a bag? Could you see him, or was he wearing?
You can see them, but just not close up enough. We've sent all the things to the police.
I can't
and everything.
Believe it. What horrible. Kind of car was it?
I had my Volvo XC90. Our design.
Hello.
Sports.
Oh,
I know.
We drive the same car.
Really?
Yes, we drive. The
so
same
you feel
car.
My pain. I mean, that car
I
is like driving
Volvo.
A tank, isn't it? It's just, it's a beautiful car. I just, it was so sad.
My baby.
Yeah.
Oh my
so
God.
So you know how I feel.
I know how you feel. I can't believe
I know.
It.
My 69 plate XC90. And I will be getting another one. And I've now got all of the precautions in place for how they won't take the next one. But I love that car. Absolutely. That's how I feel.
Like,
how dare you? I worked very hard for it. But yes,
absolutely.
But I still love driving. They won't break my spirit.
I'd be scared to take your car. I've got to say, so they're very lucky they didn't come across you. And I wondered if, you know, moving in the world of jazz, which is, let's face it, a sort of much more of a male orientated world, was it hard to get noticed and respected within that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I did have to grow my own audience. I'm aware of that. I didn't study the instrument, as I shared with you. I didn't come up through a conservatoire or playing in somebody else's band, which is the natural channel into the industry, especially in the jazz world. So I have had to sort of prove myself, if you like, or not. I've just always said, this is the music I love to create. I play the saxophone. It has an affinity to jazz, but just listen to the music for what it is. And I think over the years, it's been a long time being in the industry now. They're kind of like, you're still here. Okay. You know, we'll speak about you now. But I think along the way, it's been the audience really that has made the platform for me and made them not be able to look away, if that's the way to say it. Wherever I go in the world, I'm honestly so thankful to the audiences. They voted for me for the Mobos in the very beginning, back in 2008, 2009. And it was a public voted category. So the most votes wins, no matter who you're up against. And I'm always in debt to the audience for that. And then continuing throughout the world, they come to the concerts, they sell out the shows. And that for me is what gets me up in the morning. I'm not there for anyone to tell me that they like the music, or, you know, critics to say, here's 5 stars for your album. That's not what drives me. It is for the listeners.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And I guess that gives you a sense, you know, having that mindset gives you a sense of freedom. It's you know, you're not tied. You know, you're doing it for yourself primarily, which then translates to the audience. And, you know, again, that's quite rare.
Yeah, it's a blessing. And I know it's not always easy, but I think with the great management team that I have, we've really just said, well, I mean, in the early days, I couldn't even get booked. You know, they wouldn't book me into the venue. So we did it ourselves. And, you know, starting off booking Mermaid Theatre in Blackfriars from 2007 and selling that out. Then we booked Cadogan Hall. Then we booked the Indigo 2 at the O2 Arena. Wow. And these are Yolanda Brown headline shows. And the only way that could happen was for me and my team to do it ourselves. And literally, I'd have a hoodie on doing flyering back in the day, flyering outside of venues. But that's all the stuff that helps to build up the brand, if you like.
Is the Indigo, is that the biggest venue you've played in?
As a Yolanda Brown concert, Royal Festival Hall would be bigger as a Yolanda Brown headline or Barbican. Yeah. So that was kind of for my flagship shows here in London. Those were my big ones. St David's Hall in Wales, and we played the Liverpool Philharmonic as well. So I've done some lovely venues in my own right as Yolanda Brown, but also being able to play in other people's shows. So I've played the O2 Arena with a full packed audience and just me on saxophone. It just feels so beautiful and intimate. Same Royal Albert Hall, you know, beautiful stages all around the world.
And do you prefer the kind of sweaty, intimate jazz club, which, you know, I find like Ronnie Scott's so sexy. Yeah. You just feel like you know, you want to jump on someone. Do you prefer that or do you prefer the bigger venues?
It's an interesting one, actually, because when I play somewhere like Royal Albert Hall, for example, even though there's potentially 6,000 people in that audience, it feels so intimate. You almost can see everybody's faces still. So I still get that jazz club feel, especially how I set up my band around me. It still feels like that. So I'm always trying to create that intimacy, no matter what venue it is. But yeah, there is something about the jazz club. I remember the last gig we did in Australia, and my agent had called me and said, you know, do you still want to do the show? Grand Prix across the road has just been cancelled. We were in Melbourne. I said, I know, Grand Prix's cancelled. Can you imagine? But no, I'll still do it. And it was sold out. It was a jazz club. And you could just, like, everyone was just thinking Armageddon's coming, you know, it's like everyone knows we're not going to be out again. And it was just such a beautiful thing. And I still remember still being able to see to the back of the room, everyone smiling, dancing. There is something special about the jazz club for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. You've played with some amazing people, Billy Ocean, and just who's the kind of who is your musical icon? I know you love so many different genres, but if there was one person you could play sax with, who would that be?
I think Alicia Keys. I think I'd love to do a duet with Alicia Keys. Alicia Keys or Sting. I know, two worlds apart, but I could just imagine performing. And I love that sort of trade-off when you do a duet with somebody. So I think it would have to be someone that, you know, really wants to get into it. So I think Alicia Keys would do that, and Sting also are my two favourites.
Good choices. And is it for you, is it as important for your clothes to be as expressive as your music?
Yeah, I think this has been a journey. For a woman as well, it's very difficult because they're always looking at what you're wearing. You know, a guy can turn up in a suit, tie on, no tie, no one really cares. And for a lady, you go on and probably the first thing they're saying before you've said hi is just quick up and down. Do you know what I mean? In the very early days, I was always in a dress, always in either an A-line cut dress or sort of a straight dress. And I used to tailor make those. So I'd pick the material, and it was always kind of Ankara African print dresses. And then I would make them into this modern style that was very sort of figure hugging. And
what, you made them yourself?
Well, I had a tailor. Not quite that skillful yet. Oh, but my tailor knew me very well. And actually as well, I still do like tailor-made clothes because I still have to wear the sling around my neck that holds the saxophone. As I say, I move around a lot, so I get very hot and sweaty, so I don't want anything really tight. I always like my arms out so I've got some air to breathe. And I need that freedom of movement so it's not distracting for the music. So having things tailor-made has always been a preference of mine. I'm trying to think. I think probably when I had my daughter, I moved back to my skinny jeans. and sort of skinny jeans and top was kind of my look with my heels. And even then, I used to tailor make my tops because I just wanted to be able to be free to move. And thankfully, even doing Jules Holland's Hootenanny, the sort of military waistcoat that I was wearing, I have two of them, or three of them, that I've tailor made for me, and just feel really nice, and I can pick what top I wear underneath. So yeah, style is important.
What do you call it? Jules Holland Super Nanny?
Hootenanny.
Oh, Hootenanny.
Yes, it's the New Year's Eve.
Super Nanny. And Super Nanny, like, yeah. What the fuck is
that's
she talking
a show
about?
Waiting to happen, isn't it? Jules Holland, the Super Nanny. I think you'd be a good babysitter, to be fair. You just play piano to the kids.
I mean, you've had all your, you know, you've won your MOBO awards. And then in 2011, you played for the president of Russia, Medvedev.
That's right. Medvedev. Yes. Yeah.
How did that come about?
I think it was because of the MOBOs. Obviously, you get to accept your award on BBC One at the time and get to make your speech. And, you know, it was literally after that my agent got a call to say, a Russian president wants you to come and play. You up for that? Like, yeah, definitely. And it was all very sort of security, high security. I couldn't take my band because you can't have electric instruments inside there to accompany me.
So where did you go? To Russia?
Yeah,
did you
went, go to the went Kremlin? To St. Peter's. Went to St. Petersburg, and I played in the Hermitage in the Winter Palace. And it was, it's so ornate. I played half of the song looking at the ceiling. I think it was just like gold dripping everywhere. And to accompany me, I was performing with the quartet, the string quartet that always plays for dignitaries, called the Terem Quartet. And I thought it was just going to be a normal string quartet the way we have it here. And I got there and it was all folk instruments. So an accordion, a balalaika, a massive double bass in the size of a massive triangle, in the shape of a triangle. And so we got to rehearse just sort of the day before, and we did sort of a nice jazz standard that everyone knows, Autumn Leaves. And I said to him, can I teach you some reggae, because that's really what I play. And so in the end, we played a cover of an Ernest Randling track called Surfing and made some Russian reggae. And after that, they were so into it. I mean, the bass guy was strumming away, broke one of his strings in the performance. He was really into it. And they invited me to their recording studio the next day to record it. It was a lovely, lovely experience. And they looked after me so well. And St. Petersburg is beautiful.
Yeah, I was top of my bucket list.
Yeah,
in Pittsburgh.
Really nice.
Apparently it takes, to see every item, everything on display in the Hermitage takes 3 years.
I'd heard that, yeah. And I can imagine, the ceiling alone took me the whole performance. it would be beautiful. I didn't get to see everything, but yeah, real nice.
Yeah. Oh, and then you also, listen, you know, it's just an endless stream of dignitaries for you. And you performed at Buckingham Palace,
yeah,
for Her Majesty. How was that?
Well,
and what did you wear? Because you couldn't wear your little, what did you wear?
Well, it worked perfectly for me. I didn't get to perform. I was invited to a reception, which was very la-di-da. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't take a guest. So it was me by myself. And we had people perform to us. She was treating people in the music industry who'd been making waves in music and sort of treating them for a moment. And so she made her way around the room and made her way to me. A nice firm handshake. I was very surprised with that, and actually genuinely interested in what I'd been doing and thanking me for representing our country so well, which was really, really nice. And I think that was those moments of recognition, you know, it doesn't have to be from your peers or from the industry. That was a really lovely moment for me. And actually, that's where I met Jules Holland. I met Jamie Cullum there for the first time as well. And all being Yamaha artists, we got on and exchanged numbers, which was lovely.
Fantastic.
Oh, what did I wear?
Sorry,
the ultimate question.
Yeah.
Well, I did check the in the invitation. It says day dress for ladies, which was perfect because that was the style that I used to wear, the A-line dress. And so, it's a lovely turquoise piece with a matching bolero. I can't remember who it was. Karen Millen. Karen Millen.
It was hideous.
It was lovely. Hideous. It was beautiful. And the material just, you know, and it was just after William and Kate got married. So I went through the arch and I felt very regal that day. Oh, yes.
I cannot imagine you in that form.
In my heels as well. Of course, don't forget the heels.
Second, yeah, you had your heels. Because your hair's so cool. It's like you have this kind of almost
my
rockabilly
fro-hawk
style.
Yes, I call it a fro-hawk.
It's fab.
Yes.
Fro-hawk. It's so cool. It's so cool. And then you had tea with Her Majesty and Prince Philip.
Yes.
Dearly departed Prince Philip. Was that kind of an intimate, or was it part of the whole event?
It was still part of the event, but we actually got sort of a moment. We were had a special ticket and we were shepherded along, and then we actually got to have a few moments with them both again after she'd walked the room. And considering she'd already spoken to me, she still held a really lovely conversation, and Philip as well. And yeah, it was just, I think for me, living here in Great Britain and how much we put on the royal family, it was just lovely to get that link with them. And it does sort of rest in my heart really, really well. Mm. Yeah.
Well, clearly you deserved it. And then, so you've got your heels, and how many pairs of high heels do you have in your cupboard,
goodness,
in your wardrobe?
I was preparing for this podcast. I think I've, down to in my dressing room, I've got 40 pairs, about 10 of them I don't wear anymore. So I was going to say 30, but 40 pairs. But I find it hard to throw them away. I've been working my way through and giving a lot to charity. And in fact, I even gave some heels away on stage a couple of times as well, which has been really fun. And they wear them back to the concerts. The lady that I gave a pair in the Royal Festival Hall was just right up front. And about a year later, she put her hand up in the middle of the performance. Oh, someone's got their hand up there. Yeah, she goes, I'm wearing the shoes. I said, oh, me too. But that was lovely.
Oh, I mean, Tom Jones, eat your heart out.
Yes,
really.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you've got to keep those shoes to give. You know, you've got to keep those 10 pairs that you don't wear.
I will. And actually, I bought some here. Look, I bought a handful. These are the ones that I always wear on stage. I should
They're
hold them like this.
Stunning. What make are they?
So these ones actually are River Island, would you believe?
Are they?
Yeah, but
they,
I love that it's got
so
that cutaway
cool
at the front there.
Yeah,
but,
really elegant.
This is the minimum heel that I will wear, and then, you know, we play with the colours. But gold heels on stage. I love that they match my saxophones, you see.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So you've done a huge amount with children.
Yes.
And you've done CBBS, and you have Yolanda Banjam, which I just love that word. It sounds like Banjam is kind of delicious and donut like.
It is
such a
that
great name. And you have your own foundation. So tell me more about that.
Yeah. So I think for me, I've always had sort of the motto in my mind that I don't want to wait or have to wait till I've got $1 million in the bank to give back. I feel that as you're on your journey, you should be sharing your experiences, giving back to those on their way up as well. And I find that the reward comes from feeling great about giving to people, but also you learn so much from others along the way. And so that did spark me to start my foundation. A lot of workshops that I give every time I'm on tour, no matter what country, I'll always go either from nursery all the way through to conservatoire. I'll give workshops on improvisation or share about my story, just to motivate and inspire, which all comes under that. I've also teamed up with the amazing philanthropist James Drake, and we started the Drakeylander Award, which was more for up and coming artists who really believe in their art and believe in their brand, but find it hard to just breakthrough even more. I mean, it's expensive to be an artist. You've got PR to think about. You've got outfits to think about. How do you record the album? Where do booking agents come from and all those things? And so that has been so lovely to be able to do, to give £3,000 to 10 artists just to boost their journey. And we're seeing some amazing alumni now just really fulfilling everything that they went out to achieve, which is wonderful. So yeah, I think it's important to give back, and it's important to make sure that you inspire the next generation. And Yolanda's Band Jam has helped me to do that as well. Just having all those band jammers. We have 90 children in the audience when we film it. And also, you know, the children at home really getting involved. It's a blessing.
Fantastic. Okay, so we're coming to a close. So what has been your most memorable wardrobe malfunction?
So my most memorable wardrobe malfunction was actually imaginary. It was all in my mind, but I didn't realise it. So, as you know, I wear heels on stage, and that's my sort of can't live without item of clothing. I cannot do without the heels. And so when I come off stage, I do treat myself, take the shoes off, put some slippers on. I'm talking to the band, speaking through what happened in the first half, what we're going to do in the second half. And I remember this particular day, I think probably TMI, but I was also breastfeeding as well. So I had a quick pump in the middle as well, you know, as you do, you've got to do that. And so then it was like, oh, you're due back on stage. And so I thought I'd just grabbed my sling, grabbed the saxophones and gone out on stage. Hi, saying hi to the audience, and then started into my next song. And I was halfway through my solo, and this happens a lot. I'm playing, but I'm thinking about something else, like true mum moments. And I thought, did I change my shoes? Did I put my shoes back on? I think I'm still wearing the slippers. I don't, because the heels for me, it's just so natural, and I'm on tiptoes a lot anyway. And I thought, I can't look down. Because if I look down, the whole saxophone goes down. And I have to stop the solo. So I'm going to have to finish the solo, give a solo to the pianist, and just humbly look down. And if not, I'm going to have to run. And like, this is a good sort of 5 minute conversation with myself while I'm playing. Luckily, I handed over the solo to the pianist. I was in my heels. I don't remember putting them on, but it would have been a very surreal moment if I was wearing the slippers, and probably a better end to the story. But yeah, that for me was a wardrobe malfunction, because in my mind it was happening.
Yeah, you're a freak. What can I say?
Exactly.
And my darling, given your, you know, the fact that you travel so much,
yeah,
do you have a comfort blanket, something that is always with you?
I think it's changed a little bit now with children. At first, my comfort blanket was actually a Rubik's Cube. I always travelled with a Rubik's Cube, a 3x3 one, if I could fit it in my bag. And I always had one on my keyring. I just always loved the Rubik's Cube. But I think now it would have to be my phone. And that's horrible. I know it's the answer for many people, but my phone and earphones, just to, yeah. And I'm usually listening to either podcasts or spoken things. I don't really listen to music when I'm on the move. I like to be stationary when I'm listening to music. But yeah, probably the phone. Sorry.
No, but you know, that's honest.
Yeah.
I think most people would like to say that, but most people don't. So, you know, 10 out of 10 for honesty.
Thank you.
And Yolanda, let's say you were invited. You're going to be awarded some kind of honour by Her Majesty.
Thank you.
And what will you wear? What will that kind of glam birthday suit be? Please, dear God, let it not be the
turquoise. Well, the thing is, I've been drawn more to colour recently, wearing colours. But black is actually my favourite, and I feel the most sophisticated, and I feel, I don't know, the most put together when I'm wearing black. And I'm a huge fan of the LBD, the little black dress. So I think it would have to be a very nicely crafted, sort of tailored but appropriate for the occasion, little black dress. Okay. I think... I can, because everybody, when they put up their pictures, especially when they go to get the honours, they wear something very colourful and elaborate. And I think I'd like to just be a little bit more stoic.
Chic.
Yeah, a bit chic.
Chic and elegant.
Yes.
Okay, this is a big question that only requires a small answer, but you might have to think about it. Who's the most stylish person you've played with?
Oh, my. My hesitancy doesn't mean that nobody's got good style, by the way. I'm just trying to be the best. There's a beautiful singer called Shingi Shiniwa, and she has amazing style, very flamboyant. I don't know if I could carry everything off. But she joined me on stage for one of my concerts, and I remember us being in sound check, and I was just thinking, oh, gosh, she looks amazing. You know, this is great. And then obviously I don't get to see them. I'm already on stage and they're getting dressed. And then she came on stage and she just looked even more amazing. It sort of took my breath away for a moment. So I think she's very well styled and has her own style. But I think artists, even ones I haven't performed with, Janelle Monáe's style for me is something I love and suits her so well. And I do look into her fashion sense as a lookbook sometimes.
I can see that. Makes total sense. Well, Yolanda, you're just as fabulous as I knew you were going to be, and I hope one day I come and get to see you play.
And a big hug too. Hopefully by then we'll be able to hug.
But you really, good luck with everything.
Oh,
and,
thank
you. You deserve all the success.
Oh.
And yeah, thank you so much for taking the time.
No, it's been an honour to chat to you. Thank you so much for everything, Susanna.
Thank you, Yolanda. What a smart and joyful woman. Her latest album, Yolanda's Band Jam, is out now. Right, before we go, a little bit of housekeeping. Remember, you can always drop us a line by emailing us at help@mywardmail.com. You can find our house band duo at duoguitarmusic.com or at duoguitarmusic on their socials. And you can find us at mywardmail.com. Follow us at mywardmail and rate and review us on your chosen podcast platform.
And also, please subscribe if you haven't already. Then you'll never miss out on another episode. That's it. Thanks so much again to Yolanda, to Duo, and of course, thanks to you for listening. Catch up soon. Until then, you know what I'm going to say next. My wardrobe is officially closed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.